Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for tonight. I'm very honored to have back on the show Andy Sinowick. Thank you for
Howdy.
Coming back.
Yeah, thanks
we
for
just
having
did
me.
A show with Illinois Europa. Just about an hour or so, a couple hours ago, and that was a lot of fun. But now we're going to get into more depth on his latest album that's coming out May 3rd, Second Story. I'm going to show you the picture here. And also with me, I'm very honored also to have John Paterno, the producer. So we're going to get into some interesting stuff about making this album. It's a very... there's a lot of air, a lot of ambience to the, it's an open sound, but there's a lot of guitars and stuff. And also Craig Malone, it's good to have you here. And thank you for putting this together. But first, before I play, I'm going to play a second story in a minute, a clip of it. But let's just talk a little bit about how this album came to be, the concept and what we are going for. And then also to how you realized it, what he was going for.
What were we going for? Loud.
Loud.
Everything louder than everything else.
Exactly.
That's what we were going for.
Motorhead style. Mm. Well, it really came out of a gig that I did at the Baked Potato, which is kind of something I wanted to do for many, many years, but I had sort of my day job, which is being a session guitarist, and that's a full-time job, you know? So it's taken me a while to kind of get up to that point of being able to, you know, put together a gig at the Potato. And we finally did that and put together this amazing band. I was so happy to have all the guys there. And another hero and mentor of mine, George Deering, was in the audience. And he was like, Andrew, you got to record this. And I was like, oh, man, George, it's so much work, though. No, you guys are rehearsed. Just go do it right now. Don't even think about it. And, you know, with the guys as busy as they all are, the only thing we found was a 6-hour window that I actually tacked on to the end of another session that half of us were doing in that studio. But he was right. We got it done. The thing is, we were so well rehearsed. I kind of over rehearsed for the gig, and I thought about the arrangements so much and, you know, who should solo and, you know, is the build of this song okay and that kind of stuff. That it was sort of like doing all the work, all the pre-production and all that kind of stuff that you would do for a record anyway. You know, already done that work.
Good pre-production.
Yeah.
Makes
so
sense
that's how we were actually able to get the whole thing done in like 6 hours.
Yeah. I mean, it was ready to go the night of the gig. It was not what I expected from Andrew. I mean, that was the other thing. I mean, he's got so many chops in so many areas, and it's this just full-on explosion, you know, just like germanium fuzzes and two drummers and Wurlitzer and B3 and Tim Pierce sitting in and And he's smiling the whole time, too. Like, he's having a ball doing it.
Which I rarely do, by the way.
I actually got a great photo of him, too. While somebody else was soloing, he just looked back my way, and he had his beautiful smile on his face. So I'm like, and I took a photo, and I even sent it to you, I think. And, we had been doing lunch off and on for a while, but we'd never worked together before. But I had been encouraging him a bit. It sounds like other people, too, to explore your artistic side a little bit and play in that way. So it was really cool to see the show. I was totally stoked.
Now, was this pretty well charted out, or did you just basically give him demos or something, or did you write it out?
Yes and yes. I kind of did both.
Okay.
Because I know from being a sideman, it's kind of a drag when somebody just goes, here's the stuff, you know, and you have to like wade through all of this stuff and like try to make sense out of it. So I went and did kind of like just like a little rehearsal with a tape recorder going in the background, just to sort of so that guys that wanted to kind of more hear and figure it out from MP3s could have that. And it was also all charted out. So guys that are more like, I want to look at the page and see what's going on.
Well, let me go ahead and play the title song, Second Story. And you can get an idea of just some of the complexity of what's going on. And then we'll talk a little bit about the band and realizing this. This is a pretty interesting clip that I'm going to play right now. And you can hear there's all sorts of stuff going on. There's a lot happening in this. So here's Second Story. I just want to mention that the songs are pretty, they're not short. There's a lot going on, and I'm greatly abbreviating what's happening just to kind of get a feel of all the differences because the time flies so fast. But this is interesting, too. What's going on in there, there's a lot happening guitar-wise and keyboard, and I love the keyboard following, the Rhodes following the guitar part. That's a very cool thing. But now you have two drummers, bass, keyboards, and guitar. Mm-hmm. And did you overdub? It sounded like there was another guitar.
No, there's no overdub.
So that's all. It's all right there, right there. So let's talk a little bit about the double drum thing.
Okay.
And from you, the concept behind it, a little bit why you wanted to try that, and you, how did you make that sound so tight and so? I mean, I know they're playing really tight, but that's not easy to get. You know, to work with that. That's a kind of a complex, because drums, the difference in the way people play, plus it's an open sound.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk a little bit about, I'd like you to talk a little bit how you mic that.
Sure. But let's actually, Andrew's,
well, I guess
the key actually.
Conceptually, you know, when you sit down to do a project like this, you want to think, well, what's the point? What do I want this to sound like? And I didn't want it to go, because you get great players in a room, and it could pretty quickly, especially when you're playing a place like the Baked Potato or whatever, it can quickly go into like music for musicians only land. And I really did not want that to happen. And I've always been a big fan of the Allman Brothers and other bands that use two drummers. And I thought, well, that'd be a crazy idea. Like, and it would keep it, it would force me to choose, because I've got a bunch of, you know, material that I've written. It would force me to choose ones that would sort of suit that and would sort of like make it all like, you know, okay, force me into a corner in a way, in a good way. Like, it all has to have this kind of overall sonic, you know, palette.
Yeah, and they have to play simpler, right? To be that solid.
Yeah. Either that or some, what we ended up, we either kind of took the approach of like, you guys got to play simpler, or one guy is a more lay it down guy and one guy floats over top. And then, okay, on the next tune, you switch.
Because the only time I've ever seen a complex, I mean, the Allman Brothers or the Doobie Brothers used the two drummers, but it was, they kept a very solid, straightforward groove. I did see Yes play with all nine of them, mm-hmm. and they had Bruford and Alan White together, mm-hmm. and they were doing different things, and it was pretty complex, but Bruford was handling all the electronic percussion, mm-hmm. and Alan was doing the main groove, but that's the only other time I've ever seen anything that complex.
Well, King Crimson has three drummers now.
Now, yeah, they have three.
But But the key to this, though, well, there's a couple of keys. First of all, Andrew picked great players who had complementary swings. In other words, their groove comes from a similar source. It's not like one guy's got a really wide drunken swing thing and the other one's super tight. You know, they really complemented each other with their feel, and that was a huge thing right there. Plus, they listened to each other,
mm-hmm.
and being the musicians that they are, that's all of those things totally worked in my favor. It just made me look good at the end of the day, because those guys, they had everything worked out. When we set them up in the studio, what I didn't want to do is I didn't want it to be a super magnified sound, because then it accentuates all the differences. So if you put, you know, if you zoom in too much on stuff, then you're going to hear kick flams, you're going to hear snare flams, you're going to hear all this stuff that's going to distract you from the melodies, going to distract you from the feel of the record. So my goal was to take advantage of the bleed and to take advantage of how well they play together. So each kid has five mics on it. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Kick mic, snare mic, a mono mic that's kind of over the bass drum facing the snare, and then a stereo overhead on each one.
Wow. Because actually, to me, it sounds like a huge drum set. I don't really hear them as two people, except when one guy, I mean, mm-hmm. as a drummer, you can hear there's no way he has three hands. One's doing this on the hi-hat or the mm-hmm. cymbal, and then he's doing this over there.
More noticeable with headphones on. Actually, I think today is the first time I've really kind of listened with headphones. I was like, oh, that's really cool.
Now, when you were miking them, how did you pull back? Did you open it up a lot, or were you?
I did kind of the normal things that I would do. I don't remember placing like the bass drum mics though all the way inside onto the beater, because normally if you're doing a pop or a rock record, right, you'd have a couple of mics. One of them would be right on the beater.
Yeah.
I kept it out for this particular reason as well. I don't want to over magnify everything. I don't want to over zoom in. There's just a 57 on the snare on each of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. I think I used an RE20 on one bass drum and maybe a D112 on the other. The overheads, I just put in my standard position, or one of them I did. I have this cool mic called a Sound Field, which is a really great stereo point source mic. So I used that on Blair's kit. And for Jake, I did Glenn John's U67 style microphones, just kind of over the tom and off to the floor tom facing toward the snare. And then the two mono mics were just dynamic mics. And I don't even think I compressed them when we recorded. I think I did it later just so I had a little bit more control.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were trying to get a lot done in a short period of time. Normally I would commit to that as well, just get a sound and go. Yeah. But
They're pretty consistent, so you're not going to get like weird spikes and stuff as much, you know.
Yeah, well the whole point of that mono over the kit mic is to just basically zhuzh the whole thing up, get as much energy as you can. And so there are no room mics. It's just literally the five mics on each kit. There there weren't any other room mics out in the room that I used.
Yeah, you had the Rhodes, the Hammond,
DI.
The Hammond. How far were the mics from the Leslie?
It's only the two top mics too. I almost never use a bottom, so it's just two mics on the top that were just foot and a half maybe.
Okay, so not that side. Not too far away, no. But not really close, but not really.
No. Again, it's like you have your camera out, and I think of these things sometimes very photographically, and just how do I want the image? What do I want in the foreground? What do I want in the background? How do I want things to look mm-hmm. left to right or in the stereo field? Yeah, so we had the organ, the Leslie isolated. We had Andrew's guitars isolated, and we had Tim isolated as well. So the drums, those guys all sat in the room.
Was the bass direct?
Bass was direct.
And mm-hmm. then when you mic'd his cabinets, mm-hmm. how far or closer?
I tend to stay pretty close. I'm pretty much on the grill. Yeah, I'm pretty much on the grill with a 57, and we used Royers and 57s on all the guitars.
Okay.
And again, I'm up pretty close. Between the dust cover and the edge usually is where I put the 57. And then the secondary mic always goes pretty much where at the end of the dust cover of the voice coil.
Yeah.
So they sit pretty close as long as they sit in the same plane.
Wow. Because it sounds really open. I you really got an open sound. So the room ambiences or the reverbs you use later in post, right?
Yeah.
Because there's a room sound to this.
Yeah,
it's really nice.
Well, the thing with the ribbon mics, when you use them, you're going to get a room factor anyway because they're figure eight. That's part of the deal.
Right. There's definitely some bleed from, at least from my guitar into the overheads, I think.
There's definitely some bleed, that. Yes. Yeah. There's some. That's the other nice thing, too, because everything was cut live. There were a few things that kind of ended up, so yeah.
Well, in the studio, how is it set up? Do you have the two drummers here, and then where were the
I had the two drummers facing each other. They were only about 5 or 6 feet away from each other, if that much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were toward the front part of the room. And then... So Blair had his back to me in the control room. Jake was facing him. Just behind Jake was the bass player. Andrew was to the left of Jake, so he was to Blair's right and to Jake's left.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fred was in the back of the room playing keyboards. Andrew's guitars were off farther to Blair's right and my right in an ISO booth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the door wasn't shut all the way because we're running cables through, so we're going to get a little bleed.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting setup, though, putting the drums opposite each other.
Yeah. Well,
there's actually video of this on YouTube, so you can kind of get a sense. There's a few wide angle shots. You can sort of see how everything's
set. Yeah. Right.
It's an interesting way of doing it.
Yeah.
Because you actually get isolation by putting them opposite each other if you're using cardioids like you're using.
Interesting. Well, the point wasn't to get a ton of isolation because again, it's like I didn't want that kind of magnification. I wanted to kind of meld together because I was a little concerned about flamming things. And so if there's not a ton of low end or not a lot of like mm-hmm. peaky top, you're not going to hear those things. It's just going to blend in, and that's the key to a lot of those older records. That's why those Allman Brothers records with the two drummers, you know, they work, they feel good. And yeah, I mean, if you listen close, you're going to hear some flams, but you know, I don't want people to have to listen that close.
No,
I want them to be more.
They're that tight.
Yeah, I want them to listen to the melody. I want them to listen to the harmony. I mean, that's kind of, you know, and I want to feel the groove, but I don't want them to have to sit there and analyze it.
Well, let me, let's play, I'm going to play Humor Me. It has a great groove to it. And then you go in it, you kind of swing it.
Yeah.
A little bit. So I have that mm-hmm. little clip of that. So I'm going to play this clip, and again, we'll take a listen to how the whole sound of the mix. It's really, I mean, it's amazing that for some of the stuff where you're that tight of a miking pattern, it's still the leakage and you're getting a room sound that's really good.
Cool.
So here's Humor Me. Take a listen. Thank you. Now, before I get into the guitar thing, I want to talk about something that you do that I find unique. I've never heard many players. I don't think I've heard anybody at all do, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Except for those like drum fills on the side, that sounds like one guy. They are so tight. I mean, that is, and that's a good funky groove, and to swing it, like you said, they're right on the money.
Well, the similar feel for music. I think that's one of the things that really works in this favor.
It's just amazing. Yeah. But now, what I wanted to talk about was the when you're doing your lead, and I noticed this on some of the songs. You'll do a phrase, and then you switch pickups. Now, most guys, when they'll do a solo, they'll just hit one pickup and go for it. And you're literally changing as you go whatever you're playing. And it's just an interesting – I've never heard anybody do that, and it's kind of a cool thing.
Cool, thanks. Yeah, well, we were sort of talking before. I'm a big Steve Morse fan, and that's something he always does. If you're playing down low, it's going to be naturally the guitar is going to sound fatter and warmer, and then up high – it's going to sound brighter and thinner. So when you're playing up high, a lot of times you want to be on the neck pickup, and that way it's kind of best of both worlds, Goldilocks kind of thing. And then if you're playing down low, it's going to be, you want to be on the bridge pickup, but it's going to be brighter. So you get this kind of nasty, like gnarly, snarly sound.
It's interesting. I mean, it's interesting the approach, because I was like, is he trying to emulate being two people? Like, is he playing like...
I don't think it's that as much as like, it's probably just my own dissatisfaction with what I'm hearing.
Nope. Okay, yeah, cool.
But
okay,
it's interesting because it does accent the lines differently. It's a total different. If you had just played it with one pickup, it would have been a total different feel. And it's a subtle thing, but it's there. It's really there. Cool. So, and then the keyboards again. That was like just a great, great sound. Now all of his stuff was direct.
Well, that would have been the B3
B3, yes. So that was B3 through a Leslie, and then the Wurlitzer was direct. But that's all Fred played, right?
Yeah.
Fred Krohn.
There was a couple of clips. I'll play one in a minute. Where the Rhodes is just dirty. It's got a dirty sound. So, well, I'll play that right now I have it. It's called One of a Kind. And it's a tasty slow groove, kind of a slow groove with I love the melody. And we were talking a little bit on Alona's show. Listen to what he's playing, because the way he's phrasing his melodic line in the song, it's very vocal, not is normally characteristic as a guitar line.
That's one of my favorite things about his playing, and something Andrew and I have discussed. I just think he's a really great melody player. Like, and there aren't that many people who really can get that vocal. And I think he's got...
Well, he's played with a lot of vocalists. I think that's where you're getting it from, listening to people sing. That's what I would think. But let me play. This is One of a Kind.
Thank you.
Now, there's some interesting things happening. Now, there's two guitars there. I'm not going crazy. No. There is two guitars. But the there's that low, like, growly, distorted type of little sound. That's the Rhodes, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then you're using a panner. That's in the board, through the board, right?
No, that, I'm pretty sure that's, that came out of Fred that way. It was the tremolo.
So he's using a suitcase?
Yeah.
So with the two speakers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but we took DIs out of it. But as we were mixing this one, Andrew was just like, it can't sound, it's like, it can't sound too pretty. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he's like, can we do something with the Rhodes to kind of like mess it up or dirty it up a little bit, just to kind of give it a little. So I pulled out these guitar pedals that I have called Randomatics.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been made in a really long time, and I have two of them for some reason, and I tried them, and they were kind of perfect because that's what they do. They just distort, and they're delay and modulation pedals, and they have this mode called random mode that puts a little random LFO on the as the modulation, as mm-hmm. opposed to it being just a regular wave, a periodic wave. So yeah, so I tried them on there. I think I have a picture on Instagram of them, just like one on top of the other, and it just worked. So
it's a great sound, mm-hmm. but I mean, it's like, what the hell?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah, yeah.
It's got a nice dirty, and then so that's all coming from there. Did you do any chorusing or anything in there?
Well, the pedals themselves will pitch modulate a little bit, so I guess so there is a little bit of chorusing because of the way the modulation is working.
I was trying to figure out what he was doing, because mm-hmm. you can dirty up like one of the plugins, the old Instant Flanger,
mm-hmm.
The Eventide Instant Flanger gets a dirtier sound
mm-hmm.
when you use it. It's going for that analog thing. So I'm like, how did he do that? That's pretty cool. And the thing is, how are you going to do that live? You have to give him the pedals.
Yeah.
Because it's really, I mean, that's a killer sound.
Well, I'm sure we could figure out a way to get it close. But no, thank you for noticing too. Because you do things like this. Sometimes you just wonder if anybody even catches it.
It's ear candy. I call it ear candy.
Nope. And then this one had slap delay on the drums, in addition to a drum effect that Blair did. So if you listen close, there's actually a like a tape slap.
Yeah, I hear the slap, and then there's like a knock thing.
Yeah, and that's Blair thing. Jake, I guess, was playing the, yeah.
Again, it's hard to tell. It's two mm-hmm. guys. It sounds like, I mean, mm-hmm. there is there's these percussion parts, but it's very, very tight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your guitars, because these clips that I played already,
sure.
there's a lot of sounds coming out of here. So you're using all Rivera?
Yeah.
And then which amp are you using?
I'm using two Riveras in stereo, and they're identical amps, but they have, he's got this really cool mid knob where if you pull the knob out, it changes the center frequency. And so usually what I like to do is, one pushed in, one pulled out kind of thing. And also they were each going to their own cabinet. One was going to a 112 open back cabinet, and the other was going to an old Marshall 412 closed back cabinet.
Oh, wow.
So, and then also there, I love to play in stereo. So there's like a stereo delay thing happening, which tends to spread out the sound. But the cool thing about the two different cabinets is, speakers will break up in a certain way and respond to the guitar in a certain way. And when you have two different cabinets, they kind of do that differently. So there's almost like this natural, if you pan them left and right, there's almost this natural panning thing that happens between the two cabs, as this one's breaking up and this one's actually totally fine. So it's like this weird, like, push and pull thing.
Well, it's interesting because going from a 412 with a 112, that's pretty extreme. Usually you might use different speakers, but you use like two 212 cabinets or two 112 cabinets. How does that work? That's 412s to 112. That's pretty radical.
Well, that could be part of the extra ambience too that you're talking about. I mean, obviously four speakers, you're going to get more, you got more surface area, you got more air being pushed with the 412 cabinet. And if you've got microphones that are open in the back, then that's an opportunity for more ambience in the room.
But that's an interesting sound, I mean, to do that. Now, and then what guitars were you using?
So I just used one guitar the whole time, and that was actually another way of, like, what's the expression? Like, one decision that makes another 1,000 decisions for you. It's like, I'm just going to play this guitar, and that way I'm not going to think about, well, which one should I use on this song?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and like you say, with switching pickups or different pedals, you know, getting all the different sounds out of just that one guitar.
So which one did you use?
Oh. That would be good information to have. So I have a Les Paul that's it's actually a fake Les Paul. Actually, I think I played that on your show the last time.
Okay.
And
it's a fake Les Paul. I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a total.
And what pickups are on there?
The guy hand wound them himself.
Hand wound.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So that's because some of it sounds like a Strat in some of the songs.
One of the things I did, there's a cool guitar company called Reverend Guitars, and they do something that's really cool. They have like a traditional tone pot where if you roll it off, the guitar gets darker. But then they have a second tone pot where if you, you know, turn it down, it's actually taking bass away. It's like a bass cut. And you can just get these crazy, like gnarly, like wah, almost like you have a wah pedal on type of sounds. And I just thought that idea was so cool that I did that on the Les Paul. So there's a master tone, which works like, you know, your normal tone.
Standard.
Yeah. And then the other one, there's some kind of capacitor. We sort of tried a bunch of different values to find one that kind of works well. And so if you roll that all the way off, it makes a guitar sound really thin.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's getting like really, it's an interesting.
See, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Especially on that where you get into the. In Humor Me, too. I mean, some of that sounds Strat.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
I could have sworn it was a Strat. So, but that's a great sound. So just the one guitar.
Yep.
That's it.
There's one track on the record that we cut at my place just with three guys. And that one, there's overdubs, and I don't know what I played on that. Maybe a Telecaster or something.
Oh, okay. So you used...
Yeah, number 9, Off the Grid.
Oh, Off the Grid?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The... We'll play that at the end of the show so they can hear that. No, that's interesting. Now, I'm going to go on a tangent real quick. Is the Les Paul your main axe that you use for your sessions?
Yeah, it's kind of my go-to. You know, people like, what's your go-to? And mostly because I feel more comfortable on that kind of, on a Gibson scale length. And then also because of, you know, that switching system that I have, I can get like a thinner sound out of it if I need that.
Yeah, well, it seems like you can just do all. Yeah, it's really easy to do, but it's an interesting. I mean, I love the tone of that thing. And it was hand wound by this guy that made the guitar, so that's pretty cool. And the Rivera amps are how much power are those? Are
they're 55 watts.
55 watts.
Single channel.
Oh, okay.
6L6s.
EL34s, oddly enough.
Oh, that's a. It's got a great distortion.
Yeah, he makes great stuff. They're super versatile.
Yeah, check out the show I did with Paul Ravindra Jr. when you were on, because he brought one of the little 20-watt studio guys, and it was cool. We plugged it in direct, and it just sounded amazing, even then, with it direct. So, well, let's talk a little bit. I'm going to play Triad. Days. Now, I don't know I'll have to listen to it again to see which lead I have. So you were playing with Tim Pierce. What was, tell me a little bit about that. That's an interesting, because he's an amazing player.
Yeah. He's one of my heroes, and we've become friends over the last few years. And we always say, man, we got to do something. We got to do something. And then this gig came up at the Baked Potato that was kind of the impetus for this record. And, you know, it was like a perfect opportunity to finally do something together. And, you know, I asked him, and he said yes to my delight and amazement.
And what do you remember what he used?
He had a PRS guitar. Mm-hmm. It was one of the F-hole ones, like a...
Yeah, one of the hollow body, like hollow body 2 or something.
Yeah, but it was the standard. It wasn't the big bout one. It was like a standard bout, but with F-holes.
Did he use an amp that they have at the studio? It says Cage on it. It's like some dude built it.
I thought he used a Nailer.
You're right. You might be right, yeah.
It was either a Nailer or a Park. kind of think it was the Nailer.
Park, I think, is their amp they have at the Big Potato. It's like their one of their
standalone.
Yeah. I think I've seen it. I've seen a Park there before.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty sure he brought the Nailer though.
I think you're right.
And yeah. I don't.
I think
remember
it's a Super Drive 60. If it was the Nailer, yeah. And he had a 112 cabinet,
mm-hmm.
probably his vintage 30 or something like that.
And a 1x12. And then you were using the 4x12 and the 1x12 at the live at the Baked Potato?
I used just a 2 1x12 cabinets.
Two 1x12 cabinets. Well, let's go ahead and play. This is Triad Days. And I don't know. Let's see. If it's on the left-hand side, then I know it's Tim. So take a listen. I went into the keyboard solo because I wanted to show also, too, your comping, which was very, very cool. And it's interesting because you got to really listen to what he's doing to find those holes. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get back into the lead.
Well, I mean, it's just like what we're doing now. Like, I'm waiting for you to stop talking, and then I'll say something, and vice versa.
That's true.
People try and make it more complicated than it is, you know?
Well, but I mean, there's a lot going on in there. And that groove with the drums, I mean, again, was one playing more and one playing less? Or was they both playing the same?
I think on that one, they're kind of both doing something similar.
Similar part. One guy's probably just hitting the cymbal a little bit heavier, the guy on the right side. But you should also add that when he stops talking, you're still on the same subject, so there is an art to staying.
What are we having for dinner after this?
See, there we go. Non sequiturs do not work as compers.
Now, the setup at the Baked Potato, what was that? I mean, the two drummers were side by side, right? And then were you on each side?
So we actually put the two drummers in the back on either side of the stage, and Sean, the bass player, was in between them. And then Fred was downstage left. I was kind of in the center, and then Tim was to my right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting setup, but it's tight. Are you right?
It was funny. People were saying, man, I've had less room at this gig with less people on stage. So it kind of worked.
Yeah.
It worked great. Yeah.
It's a small room. I mean, for two drum sets, that's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, that takes up a lot of room. But it looks like what you're using setup was your own amps were small.
Yeah.
So it wasn't too much. But it's great. I mean, it's interesting how that when you're doing the lead at the beginning, that was you.
Right, yeah.
You can hear what the Rhodes is kind of doing around him. He's comping around him and stuff. And it's interesting because it's not a it's the rhythm and the same thing what you're doing at the guitar. You're not playing rhythm, you're accenting.
Right. And well, Fred's a composer by day, so all he does all day long is like, how do I make this sound awesome? And then, I mean, you give a guy like that anything and he just like makes it sound awesome.
But it's the same thing. You were doing the same type of thing on that, on the guitar. And I think that's interesting because you really have to listen and you have to find those holes. And it's not stepping. It's very easy with what's going on in that song for it to step. And you also have another guitar player in there. Mm-hmm. And he's playing some stuff too back there.
Yep. So. Yeah, it's listening and it's respect and it's kind of, yeah, just that. And just picking up on the subtleties. There's a transition in one of the tunes. I think it's Already Taken before Andrew starts his solo where Tim comes out of it. Tim does his solo and then Andrew goes into his. And Andrew just does this amazing answer to Tim's phrase as it came out. And, you know, and that's the depth of listening. And you know, they're improvised solos. I don't think anybody planned this out. And then suddenly... just the way it all segues together, it's just a real testament to Andrew, I think, and the guys, and just how well they play.
Yeah, no, that's a lot of it. It's mm-hmm. you've got some great players. I mean, Tim alone, he's cool, but these guys, mm-hmm. all these guys are great, and the dual drum thing is it really does work. What I wanted to ask too is, what was the difference in miking this setup? Was it same type of thing, or did you use the same mics, or did you use different for the baked potato?
Oh, I didn't. I was just a spectator. I sat in the back corner and just smiled the whole night.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, in mixing, was there a big difference in the sound when you got the raw tracks, or was it pretty close?
It was pretty much what I expected. I mean, you know, the days of going around to a lot of different studios and working in a lot of different places, you know, that just doesn't really happen as much for me anymore. So I spend a lot of time in my room. I do a lot of mixing and then mastering too. But I'd worked in that room a few times, although that was the first time in a while that I'd been in that place. They call it Band House. It used to be called Sage and Sound.
That song wasn't done at the Potato. That was done at the, I thought that was live.
No. Sorry, go ahead.
It was recorded live in a studio.
In a studio. Yeah. Okay, I got it wrong. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Same right. Guys who had done the baked potato gig 2 weeks prior to that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you're usually, unless you're producing, like you're doing the tracks in the studio, mm-hmm. a lot of times you're handed stuff and you got to mix it.
Exactly.
So you get whatever they give you and make it work.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was stuck with the clown that recorded Andrew's record. So I had to roll my eyes a couple of times, but I made it through. So
now that one was Already Taken. Let me play that really quick. We're almost out of time, but I want to play this because it's really interesting what he's doing on there. This is another mellow. I love this solo guitar on this. And if I understand correctly, we were talking before, there's these great, huge guitar chords in the background. That's Tim, right?
Yep.
You remember what he was using? Is that was that still the PRS?
There's a video of this, so we could figure it out. I actually think it's a 335, which it doesn't sound like it, but I'm
it sounds like a Strat.
Yeah,
it sounds like that Mike Landau, Joni Mitchell thing that he's famous for. But all right, let me go ahead and play this Already Taken.
Thank you.
just 100% taste. I love that guitar. I love what Tim's doing in the background too, and in your lead. This just sounds great. And again, you change the tone. You go, you flip around, and it gets that fatter sound, and then it gets that thinner sound. So, very interesting song, but I love it. Just again, another example of that kind of a lyric type of approach to playing, melodic playing that you were talking about, Eli. Now we're out of time, and I'm gonna take us out with Off the Grid. And I want you to talk a little bit about that, but real quick, what's happening? What's going on? www.andrewsenowick.com. You can check out stuff, and you have a YouTube channel.
I do, yeah. It's still in its infancy, but there are videos of us playing these songs as it went down on the session. So you can answer all those questions about who was playing what. Those are on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And the record comes out May 3rd, and there's a CD release party on May 1st at the Baked Potato.
At the Baked Potato.
Same cast of characters.
Oh, wow. I just heard about that now for the first time. All right.
Yes. Heard it here first.
Excellent.
Hit record. The live album is next.
Oh, look at a CD.
But anyway, so yeah, check this out. It's called Second Story. I want to thank you guys again, both John and Andrew and Craig, for putting this together. I'm going to play a little bit of Off the Grid. Do you want to set it up?
So this is the one track that was not done on that six-hour session. This was done at my place, and it was kind of an experiment to see, can I get this thing off the ground, off the grid, so to speak, you know, and just set up drums and engineer everything myself. And so that's Jake playing drums and me overdubbing guitars. We played live, and then I went back and did some overdubs.
So it's one drummer.
Yeah.
One drummer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, different bass player, Johnny Flapp.
Okay. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week. Thank you guys so much. I'll have to do
Thank
this
you.
Again.
Yeah.
And this is Off the Grid.